Before we officially start, I must give a special shout out to the boys over at Recovery. Much like myself and the lads, Chris and Ian are a couple of rugby fanatics like we all are. They've created various products with recovery in mind based around natural CBD remedies. Head over to their Instagram page or website and use the code 3blokes, number 3, followed by the word blokes, for 10% off all their natural products and feel the benefit today.
Good afternoon, good morning and good evening from wherever you are listening from. My name is Jamie Robinson and welcome to episode 115 of 3blokes and a Rugby League podcast. Jed Amos Goddard is away this week in Crete, sunning up with his girlfriend. But myself and Callum Woody Wood are back with 3blokes. Woody is also on holiday, but he's actually managed to get through some Wi-Fi in a cottage in Wales. So welcome to the podcast, Woody. We've had a cracking weekend of finals, haven't we, mate?
Awesome weekend, mate. Really enjoyed it. Loved attending the game on Saturday, same as you, and then a couple of crackers on Sunday as well. Yes, yeah, pleasure to be here and taking the pod abroad with me to Wales. Sorry that Jed couldn't make it on, but we're not all as committed as me and you, are we?
Exactly, mate. Exactly. That's the one. And like you say, mate, we were there in person on Saturday night for the Catalan Dragons against St. Helens. Superb final. In my opinion, quite an historic final, just in terms of how much pomp and circumstance there was there on the Catalan Dragons being there. But unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be. The three-peat happened. It was the Catalan Dragons 10, St. Helens 12. And we split it up again, mate, much like yourself and Jed did last week for the Penrith Panthers and the South Sydney Bunnies. I took the Catalan Dragons, you took St. Helens, and we'll start with you, mate. You covered the Super League 2021 champions.
Certainly did, and just echoing what you said there, mate, what a game, and again, what an achievement from that same team. A three-peat of Super League titles, only the second side ever to do so. Adding that Challenge Cup, which they won this year to break that drought, and this is one of the greatest ever British Rugby League sides, no doubt about it. Did it the hard way in this one, but that's what winners do. They find ways to win in all sorts of different ways, battled their way through. I think the big game experience in that Saints side, which, you know, even their younger players have an abundance, you know, a lot of 21-year-olds there playing in their third grand final and whatnot. I really think that shot them through and could easily have swung the other way. Much the same as with Penrith last week in the NRL grand final. Saints just had that little bit of extra edge and a few more clutch plays when it really came down to it. Tense and gripping the whole way through, especially live in attendance there. Saints threw absolutely everything at it in the first half and surprisingly, only got to halftime 6-4 up. Looked like they might run away with it at some points, but big chances, as they usually are in finals like this, with the two best teams around were at a premium. And both teams defended like their lives absolutely depended on it. You know, their seasons depended on it, the title depended on it. And surprisingly enough for Saints, to say that, you know, Mark Percival and Regan Grace are that strike edge, they continuously went to the opposite side in attack. Potentially that was a ploy to open up the field, which eventually it did and swing it back. But you know, both their tries came through Kevin Nakama, who was outstanding throughout, so that ploy obviously did work in the end. Saints totally dominated the territory. Throughout the game, Catalans really struggled to even get into the Saints' half, and it was a huge reason why they went for 2 points instead of going for a try. And that was a real mental victory for Saints. And, you know, you saw their players congratulating each other when that came through, you know, patting each other on the back. You know, it's kind of surprising when you're giving up 2 points, but it showed how well they defended, how much Catalans really did struggle to break through. As he always does, Alex Wormsley stood up, pure domination in the middle of the park, playing big minutes, grinding out everything, attack and defence. You know, he's been phenomenal his whole Saints career, but I think this season especially, he's finding new levels. He's awesome. There were some calls that went Saints' way, which were maybe 50-50 or, you know, possibly could have swung the other way. And there's a kind of a mixture of deserved calls, some fortuitous calls, but they always find a way to win. And, you know, in games like this, you make your own luck. Johnny Lomax came up with a massive play to set Kevin Aikama up for his second. That proved to be the winner in the end. That was a phenomenal kick. You know, it really did take something a bit special to break through for either side. Then they held out relentless Catalans attack at the end to rack up yet another trophy. And, you know, this isn't going to be their last trophy over the next few years, make no doubt about that. So, you know, it's a shame that occasion like this, we've served at such a brilliant game, didn't get, you know, the crowd, the atmosphere, and the coverage that it deserved. But like I said in the intro, there's a privilege to be in attendance there. And, you know, a game that will live long in the memory. And if anyone's not seen it, go and watch it back, find some highlights. It was absolutely awesome from start to finish. As we spoke about with Jack Wellsby, the experience this side is getting at the minute is imperative to this future. He's one of those, you know, young 21-year-olds who's been involved in a third grand final and he's played in the second one already at such a young age. And that success is why they thrive so well at the club. 9 of the 18 are Saints juniors. All 9 are worthy of, you know, a GB or an England call-up too. It's a phenomenal club. And, you know, as we'll touch on later, success they're having with the women's side as well from top to bottom, that club is remarkable. as I said, Saints side, definitely going to win a few more trophies over the next few years. And no doubt for me, Catalans will be back as well. You know, this isn't a one-off for them like maybe Salford was a few years ago. Catalans will definitely be in the big dance again.
Yeah, I really hope so, mate. Because, you know, it's, as you know yourself, be covering games in person, but watching games in person, I always find a lot more different to watching it on TV. You don't have that commentary bias a lot more. You just have a sole focus of just watching the game and being there within the atmosphere. And it was a huge shame that Catalan didn't win. And I felt like I've watched the game obviously in person. I was at Old Trafford, and then I've watched it back again on TV. And in person, I thought Catalan were really hard done by. But watching it back, I did feel like St Helens were the better side. But it was just a huge shame for Catalan, for the club of Catalan, for the city of Catalonia, and all around, you know, the south of France, and just in general for the sport. I think it would have been huge for Catalan to win. But I even felt like a draw was incoming, but I feel the longer the game went on, St Helens just ground out that win so well, and you could see they've got so many players of big game value. But I'll start with the negatives for Catalan Dragons and work my way towards the positives. I just felt they were totally, totally, totally outmuscled in the entire game, especially in the middle. They couldn't win the collision. They didn't win the ruck. They had very slow play of the ball. And this was countered into kind of a less productive attacking line. It looked like Saints were actually offside every single time the ball was played. But they weren't. They were just so eager from being in the 10 metres. And Catalan were just so exhausted from the wrestling in the tackle that they were blown. They didn't have as much in the middle, the likes of Gil Dudson and Julian Buskey. I'll come on to them a bit later on when we go through our ratings and stuff, mate. But they were just totally outplayed by the St Helens pack. And it's no surprise as to why, but Catalan have to stop relying on Sam Tompkins. You know, we know he's such a good player. He's kind of a once-in-a-generation player, especially for the English. But so many times they were probably better off missing him out in attack and playing out the back to a second rower or a centre. Sometimes less is more in attacking in rugby league and rugby in general, a bit with rugby union as well, and it becomes a bit too predictable and similar to the previous, but the line speed was killing him, and St Helens quickly worked out that Tompkins were going to get the ball on out the back or as a first receiver, and were just swallowing him up straight away, and Tompkins wasn't, He didn't even break 100 metres in this game, and I think that was a big reason as to why. I guess there were a bit of lack of experience that can't be helped. A lot of rash decisions, a lot of forced plays when I felt they should have maybe taken a tackle closer to the line, or just even a brief moment settling their heads. I felt like someone like James Maloney and Josh Drinkwater would really settle this, but I think there was at least two or three times, mate, you might remember this, that they were within 10 to 20 metres of the Saints' try line, and they'd give like a stray offload, or they'd knock on, or they'd get tackled into touch. I just thought it was really poor, and given a standard game at Super League, I don't think they'd have done that. I felt the occasion got on top of them. But regardless, I thought they were great, and I thought they stood up to the occasion. I was really happy there was 2 points within the game, because there's always a little part of you that hopes that it isn't kind of like a Leeds Hull KR game in the Challenge Cup final a couple of years ago, where it was 50-0 for a new side. But James Maloney is such a joy to watch in person. It was kind of a privilege to be there for his last official professional game, constantly trying to unsettle the Saints' defence with his left to right players, with his right to left, and switching it back to the other side. He utilises Matt Whitley and Mike McMeekin really well, and they were fantastic in their roles. It's when we had him on the podcast, he mentioned he always liked a short side runner for a second row, and you always saw that when he played in the NRL. And Whitley and McMeekin were quintessential to this. I thought they were brilliant at the weekend. All in all, I thought there were a few decisions away from winning. There was a point in the game where it could have swung either way, but hopefully they can build on the past 4 years under Steve McNamara and continue as a top side. You know, like you say, mate, you make your own luck in these type of games, but being an impartial person in this game, and you yourself as well, obviously not being a Saints or Catalans fan, Saints got a couple of key decisions go their way, and 50-50 decisions that could have gone either way down the line. There was one, obviously we'll talk about it, the Sione Mataltia strike. There was a kick into touch for a penalty that Lachlan Coote obviously touched the floor as he was out, and the touch judge was right next to him and he waved play on. Obviously, the Makinson yellow, a lot of key decisions that I felt Catalan would be very aggrieved to as well. Really good to see five Frenchmen starting in the grand final as well for Catalan, and probably the opportunity for more too if it wasn't for injuries and unfortunate exclusions. They had the likes of Arix da Costa, Benjamin Julian, Romano, Laguerre, Battieri and Chan all out as well. So they could have at least gotten double figures. And we obviously we're seeing the Toulouse Olympique side as well. They had a lot of good Frenchmen in there as well who've actually come through the Catalan Dragons. So really good to see. Really hope they kick on Catalan. I do worry because with James Maloney leaving the club and they've obviously got a quite tight knit there and a couple of players will be moved around and there's always that flip of the coin of if they can go again. But, you know, as long as players like Sam Tompkins and Josh Drinkwater and players like that stick around, mate, I think they'll definitely be top four again next year. You really hope so. Mate, we were both there in person. The attendance was the second lowest of all time behind the first ever grand final in 1998. Truthfully, mate, I'm not sure that was the true attendance. They said it was 45,000. I've been there in person, mate. It looked about 35. It looked about half the capacity. I'm not sure what you think, mate, but such a shame, wasn't it, for the occasion it was?
Yeah, it was a massive shame and obviously probably expected it really. And like you said, I think that figure might have actually been a bit inflated from what it truly was, looking at just how many kind of empty seats it was. And, you know, you wonder if more could have been done in the weeks leading up to it to try and, you know, get a few more neutral fans in or, I don't know, fill it up with some local rugby clubs or schools, whatever it is. That the marketing campaign wasn't great. For example, my dad's a pretty big rugby league fan and he's followed it since the 90s or whenever he was playing. And wouldn't say he watches a lot of Super League, but we attend a lot of games together. He came to this for me in the end, and he didn't even know it was on until the week leading up to it, until I asked him if he wanted to come along with me, which says a lot. You know, he's the sort of neutral who'd go and watch anyone, same as me and you. You know, I'd support any team in Super League, but I'd watch any two go at it. And when it was as good a game as it was, it really is disappointing. Like you say, you know, 45,000, and then years gone by, it's got 75,000. That's a huge drop-off, and like I say, it probably was expected, but it's not something you really want to see for the showpiece event, is it?
I'm the same, mate. I went with a good mate of mine, Craig Fielding, who's primarily a football fan. He's a Man U fan, funnily enough, and he likes to watch his rugby league. And he would be he openly said he would go to any big game possible for rugby league. But, you know, these tickets that we got in half-decent seats were £66. And it's like you're pricing people out of a game here. Why not just, you know, blanket everyone, 20, 30 quid a ticket? I'm not saying that they'll get 75,000 there, but they'll definitely get much more than what were there at the weekend. What's the point in pricing, you know, good spectators out of a ticket like that?
Yeah, it's backwards really, isn't it? Like, you know, if you work out the amount of money you'd make off it, you're not making more by pricing more people out and selling a few 60 good ones, are you, than, like you say, a blanket one? I mean, the block we were sat in, it was the category four ones, maybe 40 quid ones. Kind of had to pick our seats when we got up to it. You know, there's three of us. We probably had a choice of about 200 seats each we could have sat in. There's absolutely no one around us up in that corner.
Yeah, big, big shame. I've actually been to every grand final since they started, obviously, apart from last year when nobody could attend. And as much as it pains me as a Wakefield fan, but Leeds, when Leeds were getting their consecutive years in the noughties and tens, it was 60, 70-odd thousand. It was a brilliant atmosphere, so... Yeah, do hope that it gets back like that. But we need a bit of variety in the grand final. It's been great to see Salford. It's been great to see Catalan. And, you know, hopefully the likes of Hull and Warrington and Huddersfield and, you know, Wakefield, you know, anyone. We just want a new winner and a new team in there. One of the biggest talking points, mate, coming out of the game was the Querry penalty try. That wasn't a penalty try that ended up in a Tommy Makinson yellow card. First of all, a bit of a two-pronged question. Was it a yellow card or was it a red card or was it nothing? And was it a penalty try for you?
I think for me, it's probably a yellow and a penalty try I'd go for. But when you base it on, you know, precedence, which we've even seen this season where it's not been given as a penalty try and often not been given as a yellow, it's such a grey area, isn't it, without a kind of exact framework. It did surprise me a bit. It wasn't a penalty try. And also, it surprised me as well. It's the first ever yellow card in a Super League grand final. So obviously, refs aren't keen to dish them out in kind of the showpiece event. But yeah, I think Saints maybe did get away with one then. Obviously, Catalan didn't capitalise on it after either, even with a man up, did they? I don't know if you maybe fought along similar lines.
Yeah, I did. I think it once again, mate, being in the stadium, you automatically thought it looked like the 1999 NRL Grand Final where he got his head knocked off and he got given a try. I think it was Craig Smith for the Dragons. But, you know, On the second watch, you do understand, because they are about 5 to 6 to 7 metres away from the try line. Makinson does have to react very quickly, and he has to come across and clobber. Is it Fuad Yaha? I can't remember who it was in the end. Yeah, but I don't think it was a red. It was very reckless and it was a bit daft, but I don't think it was intentional. It wasn't like he lined him up. He literally had to react within a second. I can understand on second and third watching why it wasn't a penalty try, but once again, mate, if that was my team, I'd be a bit fuming with that. And I bet there's a lot of evidence saying in the past that there has been penalty tries given for much less.
Yeah, I think you could probably find similar or even lesser incidents which have been given more or less. I imagine some wouldn't have been penalty at all. Some would have been maybe a red card and a penalty try. So, yeah, it is difficult without kind of a framework to work through. And, you know, is it the distance out from the try line? Is it where the contact's made? Yeah, it could be a kind of any of four options or maybe more.
How about the Sam Tompkins play the ball, mate? It's something that's been spoken about on social media. It was a couple of minutes ago. It's pretty much the decision that gave St. Helens the game. What's your thoughts on that one?
You see a lot of those let go, don't you? Not many get given that often, but I think also it's head's trap, believer. I think it's Batchelor's knees when he's playing it back, so he actually can't get up and play the ball normally. I think, you know, if they've got maybe a captain's challenge available in Super League then that they could use, I think that probably gets overturned and maybe is even a penalty to Catalans. I don't know if that got as much coverage, but I think that was probably more contentious for me.
Yeah, I think it's, you bang on, mate. I think there's probably about 10 of them a game. And I think if the referee's intent on giving them sort of decisions, you've got to do it from minute one. You can't be giving it on the 78th minute in a key position in a decision like that. I just feel like it's just a bit weak, and I feel like the referee's trying to get himself out of a situation so he'll ping someone. I know I used to do it all the time. I very rarely put my foot on the play of the ball, but I just think it's a bit weak. And once again, mate, it's definitely not the only time it happened in the grand final, so I can definitely understand. Sam Tompkins blew up. You could almost hear him in the stands about how fuming it was, but yeah, it was a difficult one. Once again, mate, one of them decisions that you can definitely see Catalan being quite annoyed at. And I think Steve McNamara might have mentioned something in his post-match press conference as well. Looking at something that Catalan did have in their control, we mentioned it very early on, mate, about them taking the 2 points in the conversion penalty instead of potentially going for a try. What's kind of the thoughts on that one for you?
You can understand it in a sense. You know, you want to get 2 points on the board, you know, big occasion where points are going to be at a premium, but like I mentioned, Saints' reaction to it, and that kind of gave massive momentum and a bit of a G up to Saints, is, you know, almost surrendering the chance to keep going for a try. So I think it was such an easy one in front of the post, it is a guaranteed 2 points, but maybe looking back on that, they might have fancied having another set of six at that, whilst they almost had Saints on the road.
Yeah, it's an easy one in retrospect, isn't it? I guess it's just, I think in a grand final especially, you've got to probably take the points whenever you get them. But, they look like they're about to break St. Helens down. And even though you're guaranteed 2 points, but if you concede and you take the 2 points, you're basically conceding defeat to the fact that you can't break them down in that moment. So I think it would have been one of them that if Catalan win by 2 points, you hail the fact that they're a mastermind team and they've done a brilliant move there, but just didn't work out for them, mate. And last but not least, in terms of decision-making and stuff from the referees and the officials and whatnot, the Sione Mataltia strike on James Maloney, it happened around the third or fourth minute, didn't it, mate? It happened quite early on. Sione Mataltia came in a little bit late on James Maloney. He didn't like it. And then kind of Sam Tompkins were involved, and I think Morgan Knowles as well. Sione Mataltia strikes Maloney right in the face. It wasn't contentious. It happened. Should he have been shown a yellow card for that one?
I think he probably should have, yeah. You know, if it's picked up and looked at properly, it's another one of those, which I think they have got away with. If he caught him fairly cleanly, I think if he'd maybe caught him a bit cleaner and Maloney made a bit more of it, maybe they look at it a bit more. But, you know, especially so early in the game, they kind of moved on from it pretty briskly, didn't they? And it didn't really get a look in.
Yeah, I totally agree, mate. As soon as I saw it, I'm not a St. Helens or Catalans fan, but even I was screaming that he's got to at least sit out for that, because how many times can you reiterate the fact that a strike to the face is at least a yellow? And it wasn't a push. It wasn't kind of a pie face away. He full-on struck him in the face, and Maloney could have had a broken nose or a couple of chipped teeth from that. So, yeah, difficult one when, once again, when they're not making decisions that have been consistent throughout the year, so it confuses me, stuff like that. Last but not least, mate, kind of a bit of an interesting tidbit, but Kyle Amor didn't even get on the field. Can't understand why they've done that. It's not like he's some young kid filling in at kind of a shirt and might not have the experience. You know, someone who's in the 30s and played grand finals before and had a lot of big match experience. What do you think the reasoning behind that is?
It surprised both of us a little bit, didn't it? When we kind of got past the game and realised he hadn't got on at all. And yeah, I've absolutely no understanding as to why that happened. Kyle Amor definitely wasn't happy with it. I think he kind of wanted to avoid Wolf a little bit at full time. And like you say, he's not, you know, some young lad who they've had to put in because they, you know, don't have the players to fill at 17. He's been around the block. I think this was his fourth grand final win. Performed admirably in the past. I have no idea why he didn't go on for, you know, at least a bit of a rotation, even if it was for 15 minutes whilst Worms got a rest or whatever. No reason as to why that happened for me, but yeah, it's a weird one.
Yeah, peculiar one, mate. Right, mate, on to our player ratings. You go first with St. Helens, the 1 to 17, actually probably 1 to 16 without Kyle Amor, obviously, as well. Same again as we always do on this podcast. Straight onto the field, you are automatically a 5 out of 10. That is your average. If you play better than that, if you play worse than that, you are based around the 5 out of 10. So shoot us your ratings, Woody, for the St. Helens side.
Yeah, we'll do. And kind of, I guess with similar to the NRL Grand Final, it's pretty difficult for players to get a very, very high premium score with how tight the game was. And now, I guess, a little opportunity for, you know, big attacking games that was. But starting from number one then, Lachlan Coote, giving him a 7.5. Well, he was really nice and solid in what's his final Saints outing. It's surprising that they've kind of let him move on, but he didn't get to carry an awful lot, but really quick hands to set up that first Nagama try. Kicked all his goals, which proved absolutely crucial in the end. You know, won by 2 points. And he's got 3 grand final wins in his 3 years with Saints, and great way for him to bow out before he moves to Hull KR. Onto the wings then, Tommy Makinson, giving him a 6. He made plenty of metres as ever, carried an awful lot, but did have that unwanted history of the first ever grand final yellow card. I suppose if you look at it in a flip side, however he made it, that cover tackle might have saved an almost certain try. So maybe it was actually a big positive playing it a roundabout way. Like it could have been a lot more costly, but it wasn't in the end. On the other wing then, Regan Grace, giving him a 6. Maybe a little bit harsh because, you know, he did what he needed. Didn't do anything spectacular and couldn't ever quite break the line. Looked like he might a few times. Returned kicks made really well. Made a couple of errors, but nothing which let his team down. Same centres then. Kevin Nagama, 8.5. Excellent effort in. Well, it sounds like it's his last game of rugby league. He might be retiring and thought he might go and pick up an NRL contract. But if it is, fair play to him. He's only 32 years old. Scored both the tries with 2 really good determined finishes, especially that first one. You're busting through about 4 players. Top meter maker in the entire game. 7 tackle busts. Made 2 of the 4 line breaks in the game. 16 out of 17 tackles, and he's a constant threat whenever he touched the ball. Mark Percival next to him. This one also might sound a bit harsh. I've given him a 5.5, mainly because he had kind of 5 negative plays. He had 3 errors and 2 penalties. And usually, you know, by his high standard, he normally has, you know, at least 5 busts in a game, but applies himself brilliantly every game. Solid, but pretty quiet for him. Into the halves then, Johnny Lomax given an 8. Massive hand in teeing up both tries. Assisted that second one with kick through and helped set up the first as well by holding off by putting a lovely ball across to Coote. And in these games, like I said earlier, you need a bit of magic when chances are at a premium. He came up with it twice. Didn't really manage to get his running game going well, but he didn't really need to. And what he defended brilliantly as well. He's an excellent defender. Lewis Dodd next to him, 7.5 for him. 19 years old and starting in his first grand final. Really composed performance. 33 tackles as well. And I think he's ready to take on Theo Farge's mantle, you know, full-time from next season. Into the pack then, starting with the props. Got Alex Wormsley. Giving him a 7, always reliable, put his hand up and made the hard yards. But he's, you know, compared to how he's been in other games with the impact he has, he's reasonably well contained. But, you know, that's still 20 carries for 126 metres, 5 tackle bursts, 1 offload, 15 tackles without a miss in just under 50 minutes. So if that's containing someone, then God help them when he, you know, he's getting a bit more joy. Matty Lees, the other prop then, 6.5, chucked himself about for just over 40 minutes. Made a few dents, but it didn't carry often enough. I think he only made 5 carries, maybe, compared to, you know, 20 by Alex Wormsley. 29 tackles, though, for Matty Lee. So, good effort from him. James Robian at hooker, 7 for him as well. Usual self. And that was his 10th grand final. I think he's one off Jamie Peacock's record now. Played the full 80. top tackler on the pitch, as per, at 43. Didn't get to run the ball much at all. He's just such a smart player. Not getting to run the ball much, you know, it's a similar story for a lot of players. Into the back row then, Sione Mataltia, giving him a 7. Might have been a bit lucky, you know, with that early incident with James Maloney, but he was really fired up, which obviously shows in what he did there, throwing a punch. Led to giving away 2 penalties, but 121 metres from 14 runs, 3 busts, 26 tackles. Think he's been a really good addition for Saints this season. Joe Batchelor then, the other second round, 7 for him. A couple of silly penalties aside, but a really good first ground and final appearance for him as well. 40 tackles, which was just behind Morobian. Made one of the rare line breaks in the game as well. And rounding out the starters, Morgan Knowles in the 13 shirt, 7.5 for him. He's such a good player and I'd absolutely love to see him in the NRL. I'm sure a lot of clubs would be love to have him in their side. Put some absolutely brutal hits in. Got the ball through his hands nicely a few times. So, yeah, a really great effort for him. And on to the 3 bench players who came on then. Louis McCarthy, Scarsbrook, 5.5 for him. Put himself about as ever, but, you know, he didn't get to have a huge impact in just one stint on the pitch. But made a big challenge on Sam Tompkins, which may have wanted a sin bin as well. Kyle Amor in 15, obviously not applicable for him. And then Agnatius Passi, 6.5 for him. But he came on when Worms went off for a rest and filled in really, really well, rotated. Made some massive carries and got through 19 tackles without a miss in 28 minutes. You know, he was revved up and that was a really useful stint. And rounding out, Jack Wellsby, 6 for him. Not quite as memorable individually as him as last year, but, you know, another grand final ring for him and did his best to chuck himself about and get involved. Made about 50 metres, had a few busts as well. And I think he's got another massive season coming up for him next year. Lock on Coop moving on.
Totally agree on Wellsby, mate. And not just because you're on the podcast, but I was watching him intently because he's so dangerous off the bench. He made a really important half break as well, just after half time, that I thought really swung the momentum in Saints' way. I think he made about a 40, 50 metre break up the middle of the field, was spot on for him. So brilliant, mate. So for you, let me just double check that. So Kevin Agama is your man of the match, technically, for St. Helens, which works out quite well because he won the Harry Sunderland medal as well with the likes of Johnny Lomax just behind him as well. So, yeah, Johnny Lomax especially, mate. What a player he is. So underrated in every single regard. I'll move on to the Catalan Dragons, mate. So, number one, Sam Tompkins, I gave a 7.5. I thought it was superb throughout the game. He's constantly enticing and he's so evasive in himself in attack. You can tell the mark of a great player, in my opinion, with how much the opposition fans hate the fact that he's even allowed to touch the ball. Everyone around me was absolutely fuming that he was even a person. You know, oh, Sam Tompkins, I hate him. Like, get him smashed, get him smashed. He's a great, great asset to our game. He speaks really well. And he's a great character on the field as well. He's superb on his day. 8 tackle breaks he got throughout the 80 minutes. 87 run metres, which obviously was a bit cut down, as I mentioned, because of the Saints' line speed. It looked like he could score every time he touched the ball, in my opinion. Really, really good player. And unfortunately, on the wrong side. Over to the wingers, two different performances I felt. Tom Davies had a really good performance, about a 7 out of 10 for me. He's fantastic out from the back, and especially with those get-out sets that we mentioned last week. Linked really well in the pendulum 3 with Sam Tompkins and Fouad Yaha, who works really hard and not afraid to put in a shift in. He really didn't deserve that final minute knock-on, in my opinion, but that's how the game goes sometimes. Obviously, it'll be on the back pages in terms of handing Saints the game, but he was only one of 2 Catalan players who actually broke 100 metres in with 116 metres throughout, so he really earned that. I thought he had a good game. Fouad Yaha, I gave him a 5 out of 10, not necessarily. Looking at it, mate, we didn't give anyone less than an average game, which I felt was pretty standard. I thought it was... You know, not the worst, but the least best out of the back 3 players. Kind of must be quite frustrating to watch. He's brilliant on the occasion, but also doesn't really back himself. I felt he had a lot of different chances to break the line or beat an opponent or even potentially cross the try line, but he decides to come back on himself too much. He didn't necessarily have a bad game, but just averaged and one where he really struggled when Dean Vare went off the field as well. Coming into the centres, Sami Sulmilangi, I gave a 7.5. Thought it was probably Catalan's best back on the day, actually, even better than Sam Tompkins. He actually averaged 7 metres per run with 131 metres overall, 3 tackle breaks, 1 line break, and just strong with the ball in hand all day long. Saints really targeted him in defence, though, and this showed with 7 missed tackles. I felt as though they were going down his side quite a lot. But he's a really good player, and he was lucky not to get a 1 out of 10 just for the fact that he declined Wakefield's transfer as well. But no, I thought it was actually really good on the day and I thought he stood out a lot. Dean Farré, give him a 6 out of 10. Tough night for Dean Farré. I really do rate him. I think he's an excellent player, but and he's had an excellent season. But he ended up leaving the pitch just after half time and didn't manage to get back on. Always so strong in defence and kind of the dream for a centre. For he's the dream centre for a winger, just with his delivery and kind of experience. Very reliable player, but just didn't manage to get to do too much. Obviously, the first half was a bit of an arm wrestle. I mean, the second half, he only managed about 3 or 4 minutes. So one of them where it just wasn't his day. Number six, best player on the field for me, James Maloney. I give him a 9 out of 10. I thought he basically didn't get the Harry Sunderland medal because he was on the losing side. I felt as though he deserved it by a country mile. Watching him in person is just a treat. He's probably one of the greatest ever to lace a pair of boots, in my opinion. And I don't know if that's a bit biased because we've had him on the podcast or he's played for a lot of good teams, but his stats speak for himself. The way he was controlling the game from start to finish, he's kind of pointing players in direction. He's constantly jibber-jabbering to his players, to his opposition. He's shouting the odds. He was involved in literally every single set. I'd love to see the amount of times he touched the ball. I bet he was close to triple figures. He managed 15 in-play kicks and 2 tackle breaks as well. He's just an absolute general on the pitch. And he's really going to be missed by the Catalan Dragons, but he's going to be missed by the game of rugby league. And it's a huge shame that he's not going out on top. Once again, not everybody gets that fairy tale, along with someone like Benji Marshall at the South Sydney Bunnies as well. Thought he was superb and a bit unfortunate not to get man of the match. Thought his halfback partner in Josh Drinkwater as well was had a great game. I gave him 7.5. Kind of the perfect halfback partner, really. He kicked a beautiful 40-20 that almost swung the game. He played 9 in-play kicks throughout the game, with 7 of them actually being attacking. So it really showed the balance between Maloney was kicking for territory and possession, and Drinkwater was kicking purely for the attacking side of the game and to get a bit more oomph in kind of the offensive side. So direct and works really well with his outside second row as well, similar to Maloney. Coming to the front row, I gave Dudson, McLaurin and Bousquet all 5.5s. And like I mentioned before, I thought they were just totally outplayed by the likes of Robert, Wormsley and Matty Lees. Expected more from Gil Dudson. He was actually one of the players in the Salford team who lost to Saints a couple of years ago. Thought he did well enough, but he's always obviously always strong in the carry, but he just got outplayed, in my opinion. 47 run meters from 7 runs in a grand final's quite poor. Similar to Julian Bousquet, he's slightly better than Dudson, but it's still not enough for me. Managed 1 offload, but 49 run metres says it all, really. I think Steve McNamara seemed to have a bit more faith in his bench forwards coming off than he did Dudson and Bousquet because they didn't play big minutes. Similar story from Mickey McLaurin, really. Always difficult playing against Roby, who's unstoppable on his day, almost like the English Cameron Smith when he's on the big stage. Strong in defence, he got 34 tackles, but I kept seeing as well, mate. I don't know if you saw it, he kept slipping. I don't know if he had the wrong studs on. He must have slipped about 3 or 4 times coming out of the hooking position, which, you know, I'm not saying it's purely down to you, but you've got to get your right foot in and your right boots depending on the weather, especially a football pitch as well. It's going to be a bit different to a rugby league pitch. Moving on to the back rowers, I give Matt Whitley and Mike McMeekin both 6.5s. Whitley worked really hard, both as both the back rowers did. Almost became a bit of an easy get out to give to the kind of 11 or 12 when things weren't working in the middle, but they became a bit too isolated on the outside sometimes. Whitley himself got 26 tackles and 68 run metres. Never takes a backward step. And he played the majority of the game with a fractured hand, which is unbelievable in any sense, playing any game with a fractured hand, but never mind a big final. I really feel for Mike McMeekin. You know, it's his second grand final loss with his second different side, similar to Gil Dudson. He lost it with Castleford a couple of years ago. He just worked for every inch in the entire game. And this showed, obviously, he got the only try for Catalan as well. 31 tackles with 82 run metres. Big effort from him. And 12 of those 31 tackles are from the marking position as well. It's one of them kind of unwritten rules in rugby league. Going at marker isn't just the fact that it's a bit of a breather and a bit lazy. You've got to work hard for marker. And 12 marker tackles is brilliant from him. Wouldn't be surprised if he gets called up for England. He's been out on the peripheries the past couple of years, but probably deserves another call-up. Looking at the 13 position, Benjamin Garcia, I give a 7. I thought he was the epitome of a workhorse in the lock forward position. Worked his backside off in the middle of the park. 48 tackles in 70 minutes for Catalan, a superb effort. Another Catalan's forward who played the game with a fractured hand. I don't know when he did it, but him and Whitley fractured their hands in the game and still played on. Oh, a phenomenal effort. Goes relatively unnoticed a lot of the time. I feel, you know, people still think of Remy Castie, even though he's moved on, you know, them big bustling Catalan forwards, but he's certainly earned the praises of his teammates. And looking at the bench, I gave Arthur Morg and Mikel Gudemon 6 out of 10. Morg only played 18 minutes, but I thought he played the roving number 9 quite well, coming on for Mickey McLaurin. To say he's a fullback as well, 14 tackles in a position that isn't his primary position is really impressive in a grand final. And probably a future number 1 when Sam Tonkins decides to give up that fullback position. Mikel Gudemon, you know, once again, I give him a 6. He can't really shirk his on-field work, but he came on in the centre position in terms for Dean Farrey. He's not a centre, and he's definitely not a centre in a grand final. 21 tackles, 39 run metres. Just found it difficult to insert himself in the game when he didn't really have that chance. He was kind of plugging a hole. And the two bench forwards that I mentioned earlier on, Joel Tompkins and Sam Cassiano, I gave him a 7 and a 7.5 respectively. I felt Steve McNamara relied on these two more than he did with Bousquet and Dudson. Joel Tompkins played the game like it was his last chance, and it probably could be the fact that he's moved to Lee and he's moved down a division. Made a career of fighting for everything as Joel Tompkins, and this was no different. He managed 83 run metres in 56 minutes with 22 tackles. They are phenomenal numbers. And I imagine Joel Tompkins just to be one of them players who's really difficult to tackle. He takes 3 or 4 men every time he runs the ball. He probably runs with his elbows up and he's kind of his head waggling and nutting everybody that he comes into contact with. So fair play to Joel Tompkins. I thought he had a really good game. And I thought the best forward for Catalan all game was Sam Cassiano, 7.5. Probably would have hit over 100 metres if he would have been playing the entire game, but he played 52 minutes. Great effort from the big veteran. 18 tackles and an offload as well, 81 run metres throughout. Always been the same type of player, just a big bustling machine, loves an offload, who's any value, he's big value to any pack. So yeah, just very briefly, like we've mentioned, probably one of the most memorable finals in a long time for me. It was so close, Catalan in a final, very unfortunate as well. But they weren't just the only final this weekend, mate. There was actually a couple more this weekend. We obviously had the games yesterday, Workington Town 36 against Doncaster 12. They move up to the Championship now along with Barrow Raiders. Two Cumbrian sides getting promoted, which is great for the game once again. Toulouse Olympique 34, Featherstone Rovers 12, mate. I'll be truthful, I didn't watch all the game, but I caught some of the key highlights. Brilliant for the game once again, mate, into another French side coming up. And what's your thoughts on Toulouse?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic for not just the French game, but the game in general. On the game specifically, at half-time, like they're absolutely going to run away with it. And they're 16-0 up at half-time, but Fev did fight back a little bit. And I think, you know, Fev have had a great season as well, but, you know, Toulouse have had a 100% season in the league. You know, they played a few less games because teams weren't travelling out there, but, you know, they've come over here quite a few times and got through some tough occasions and really excited to see how they go. You know, Remy Castie retired after the game, didn't he? So he won't be back with them in Super League, but you know, they've got some great players in there. You know, Ewop Pelissier, you've got Tony Guijo in there, Mitch Garbutt and whatnot. And hopefully they have a real go at it next season and establish themselves in there. And I think when Catalans and Toulouse do play each other, I think that especially should be a great occasion. And, you know, you'll get your doubters and that, you know, would have rather had Featherston in Super League because of where they are and they don't want another French team in. But this is the only way rugby league is going to grow, isn't it? And having a new team in there, another team not in, from the UK, I think it can only be a good thing for me. I don't know. I know you'll agree with that. And what were your thoughts on it, mate?
Yeah, definitely, mate. It's nice to see them do it the traditional way as well. They've not just been planted into one of the leagues with a big payment and they've come up automatically. They've strived for a lot of years in them divisions and come through the French leagues and built up the correct way. It's really good to see him come in. I hope they make a bit of an impact next year and not so much of an impact that it costs Wakefield a spot that they end up going down. But I think they'll do well. I think just calculating up, I'm not sure if I'm 100% right, but I think 9 of their starting 17 were French as well. I'm not entirely sure on that. I know for at least the fact that they had about 6 or 7. I think 9 of them overall. And I know they've got a big squad of French players. So fantastic for the game. Featherstone will be back. They're one of the best sides in that division. They have been for a long, long time. So hopefully their time will come. But brilliant game. Great for the sport of rugby league. Another French side in the traditional way. And last but not least, mate, something that we've been really passionate about since we've been doing the podcast, the Women's Rugby League Grand Final. So happy for the girls that they managed to get all the way to the end of the season, even though the World Cup isn't going their way. And it went the way that everybody pretty much expected. St. Helens 28, Leeds Rhinos 0. Nothing upon the Saints girls. We saw after the game, Jodie Cunningham even said that it probably flattered them a bit. Leeds actually played quite well, but just couldn't get any points on the board. This St. Helens side are just so dominant and probably will be for a couple of years to come, won't they, mate?
Yeah, when you look at the squad they've got, you know, we've had quite a few of them on the pod, haven't we? We've got a phenomenal squad, Jody Cunningham, Amy Hardcastle, Emily Rogers. You know, the whole team's full of superstars. And now I mentioned that the Saints men's team is one of the best sides in British Rugby League in recent years. And I think this women's team, if not already, I think they will establish themselves as one. They're going to win a lot more trophies over the next few years. And on the game specifically, a really good occasion. Always class to see it on, you know, on TV. It's on the Sky. But nearly 4,500 there at Headingley watching it, which is the record for a Women's Super League Grand Final attendance. I think they've only had three so far it's been attended at. But you know, anything that keeps growing the game is brilliant. And you know, it looks like a bit of a landslide. It was a really tough game. And in the first half especially, it was a bit nip and tuck. And I've seen that Leah Burke try, the opening try, that was an absolutely awesome finish to dot that down before it hit the try line. And on Leeds as well, they're another brilliant team. Sophie Nuttall got a bit of a nasty injury in there, so kind of wish her well. I think she strained her neck ligaments mainly. There's quite a long stoppage for that. But yeah, this Saints team are ridiculously good. I think they've conceded on average less than 4 points a game across the season. Won a lot of games to nil. They're brilliant, so good to watch. And you know, Women's Super League in general thrive. And I think if anyone can get yourselves down and watch a game next season, watch the games on TV and get involved with it, because it's only going one way and that's up.
Excellent stuff, Woody. Thank you for joining me, mate, on this cold Monday night in October. It's only going to get colder, I think, mate. But thank you, everybody, for listening to episode 115 of Three Blokes and the Rugby League podcast. Head on over to all our social media pages where you'll find a variety of content which will hopefully pique your interest. Also, please give us a rating on all our podcasting platforms, if possible, please. We are available on all podcasting platforms. Keep an eye out for any future podcasts or interviews. I don't even need to tell you the amount of people we've had on in the past. I go through it every single week. We've recently had Kelsey Gentles on, who's an absolute superstar in her own right. Have a listen to that podcast. It's an exceptional piece. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you very much, Callum, Woody, Wood, and thank you, everybody. We'll catch you all down the road.